Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, January 15th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everybody. We made it. And it is 30 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. I saw it was going to get up to 43 today. So maybe a little bit of melting of that little bit of snow that we got. I'd be happy if it all went away. So where did we leave off yesterday? It seems this week has been the week of freaks. We've talked about lots of human-animal hybrids and chimeras this week. And that is what we titled this, Human-Animal Hybrids, Chimeras, and 21st Century Medicine. And the reason why I mentioned 21st Century Medicine is because we've looked at how much mad science gone mad there is. But as aptly as Lonnie Clark pointed out, in a comment on the show yesterday, it was really scary because we had scientists. There was a scientist, the Japanese guy, in the last story that we read, had mentioned that how there was too much paperwork to be able to get participants' cellular cultures, DNA swabs, to utilize in these experiments. And he was mixing DNA at an embryonic level with sheep and pigs and letting them gestate to see what would happen for a little while. And because it's such a big pain to get paperwork done and get volunteers, he's been using his own DNA to do that. And yeah, very frightening thought when you start looking at how mixing human cells and animal cells might influence their brain development at an embryonic state. I don't know. There definitely are a few oddball things going on. So anyway, I think we're going to continue on that today. You know, we've kept going on about, you're only human, but your kids could be so much more. And we still haven't finished that. We discovered that what they're doing right now is using in vitro fertilization, which we've had around for a really long time. And now they're mixing in some of this CRISPR-Cas9 technology to be able to genetically modify the human embryo and then implant it. And what's we've been talking about this for quite a while, but a story just came out yesterday. And, you know, we hit a story yesterday from 2011 about the animal-human-animal hybrids. There were 150 of them they found in a lab. And China, the Chinese clone guy, saying that we are just about ready to start creating genetically modified humans. And as far as the technology goes, he's got it all. But it isn't really approved anywhere. Well, check this out. This just came out yesterday. We could be just weeks away from the first genetically modified human in Britain. Says scientists in Britain are awaiting a decision by the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority, or HEFA for short, and whether the editing of spare IVF embryos for research purposes is to be made legal. Of course, these are the leftovers. You know, if somebody was going for IVF fertilization, they might have taken 10 eggs and it only took 3 eggs to get pregnant. What do you do with those extras? They're looking to be able to get approval to use these for scientific research. If the bid is approved, a team at the Francis Crick Institute in London says that it could begin work straight away with the first transgenic human embryos in the country, expected to arrive within a few weeks or months. Dun, 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 dun. Here it comes. This is really scary. Since, you know, I mean, besides China, and let's leave China out of this because China is a whole different animal. But I mean, we're talking like a Western nation here. A Western nation that's part of, you know, the side that we kind of side with, you know, not some shady lab in some shady country somewhere. Not that, you know, I mean, you can leave your own judgments there, but I'm just saying, this is the UK, and they may approve this here any day now. Embryo gene editing You know, and I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, once they do that, then we're going to be sending scientists over there to all their little mad science labs. Embryo gene editing is a very controversial topic. And I believe, though, in the UK, that was the country where they also allowed the three-parent fertilization just recently, last year maybe. I think it was last year, year before. Last year, I don't know, time just bleeds together. Three-parent IVF, where they used the genes of the parent and the other parent, and then there was some genetic defect, so they used the genes of the third parent to correct the genetic defect. All right, embryo gene editing is a very controversial topic, and some believe that it provides an invaluable way to prevent genetic disease at birth. Others think that it will eventually lead to designer babies. Yeah, of course it will. If you got enough money, like they said in that other story we're going to get back to, you'd be able to order the kid like a pizza. A pizza menu. Hold the blue eyes. I want green. Lead to designer babies and other unethical uses. Yeah, like super soldiers. As well as affecting the evolution of future generations that cannot possibly be predicted. Ding, did a ding, ding, ding. Well, hey, I hope Science Alert was listening to the show yesterday, because I think we talked about those very topics yesterday. The practice is currently banned in the U.S., while researchers in China have come under fire for their own early experiments, although only non-viable embryos, which couldn't result in births, were used. You know, we do get quite a lot of listeners from Australia. That is where this publication is from. I really hope they're not, like, listening to my show. And because how weird is that? That was just, like, the whole day yesterday. They distilled it down into two paragraphs. All right, in the UK, it is permissible to use this gene editing technique for research purposes as long as the embryos are eventually destroyed. And hey, that's exactly what the story I read yesterday said. And as France's Crick Institute is the first organization to apply for a license under these guidelines, it is something of a test case, which is why the decision is attracting so much attention. The scientist behind the application wants to study the fundamental causes of infertility in embryos over the first 7 days of their life, and technically known as the blastocyst stage, and that will still be forbidden to implant these embryos into the womb. And the researchers say that that is not their intention, but if their tests are successful at limiting the chances of a miscarriage, the pressure to allow genetically modified babies will grow. You know, and you're going to have all these poor people going, we want to have a baby, please. Just like the IVF now, I told you I know so many people that these OBGYNs just really push it, you know, encouraging them, as a matter of fact, to go IVF. Don't worry about it. We can take care of it. You know, we can mix it up. Hold on, I'm going to sneeze. Oh, it went away. We can mix it all up and we'll make sure you get pregnant. Don't worry about it. And, you know, like I said, there are some people who are meant to have kids and some people who aren't, but don't force it. So now, you know, just the fact that they could IVF it before was a big deal. But now, if they could use in vitro fertilization as well as being able to modify an embryo, and, you know, I mean, the first thing, you know what it's going to be? Pick if you want a girl or a boy. That's what it's going to be. That's going to be the simple number one genetically modified embryo. You will be able to decide preconception if you're going to have a girl or a boy. The next thing, maybe eye color, something that's very innocuous, to kind of lay the stage for making people comfortable with super babies. But yeah, I would say, and maybe hair color even. Brown or blonde or redhead. Green, blue or hazel eyes. And whether or not it's a girl or boy. Mark my words. It's not going to be too much longer past that. Once they start discovering where all these little buttons are inside the DNA. that if you got the money, they got the CRISPR technology to be able to engineer whatever you are looking to do for manipulating the embryo of your new offspring. All right, anyway, as we reported back in September, this is Science Alert, when the application was first made, yeah, well, guess what? We did too. The Francis Crick Institute team wants to use a new gene editing technique called CRISPR-Cas9, which enables scientists to cut out unhealthy DNA and paste in improved alternatives. Since its discovery 3 years ago, the CRISPR-Cas9 procedure has become more straightforward and less expensive to apply. The Crick's Institute Robin Lovell badge. Actually, we had a quote from that individual yesterday, another story that we did. So I thought, wow, what a strange name. gave Steve Connor at The Independent one example of how gene editing might be used. Quote, if you found that there were people carrying a specific mutation, which meant that their embryo would never implant in the womb, then you could contemplate using genome editing techniques that make germline changes, which would then allow the offspring of that woman to be able to reproduce without having a problem. And yeah, I mean, this is talking about some sort of genetic disease that's been passed down through generations of your offspring, and you got this one little problem, which, I mean, if you really had a genetic issue that prevented eggs from implanting, then you probably wouldn't be here if it were that severe, right? But I get what they're saying. Some sort of genetic disease like, cystic fibrosis was one that they had mentioned in one of the other stories. Cystic fibrosis is only life-threatening when you have two parents that have the gene and the child then gets it. But they typically, they're going to make you do a DNA test before, when you first get pregnant. And I don't know if they do that to everyone, but they do when they get you. When you're getting close to 40 and you're pregnant, they make you go through the whole gamut and make sure they bill the insurance for all of it. I had all the damn tests done. They made me get them. But one was to see whether or not there was a cystic fibrosis gene in the mother's DNA. And if they find it, then they make the father get the cystic fibrosis test. And if both parents have the cystic fibrosis gene, then I don't know. I mean, I don't think that there's any type of like forced recommendation, but I think they recommend terminating the pregnancy at that point. Just because cystic fibrosis is something that they don't have a cure for. It is they didn't have a cure for. It's a genetic disease. And the offspring typically die at a young age. I mean, it's a really horrible lung breathing disorder that there's all kinds of issues. So I don't know. I mean, I could see in something like that case, if they could fix it easy with a snip here and a snip there, and it's, you know, something that is preventing you from having kids. But I don't know. I mean, this is just such an ethical slippery slope. I wouldn't let them mess with my DNA and then tell me to go reproduce. It's not going to happen. It's a good thing. I'm way over the hill now. All right. Once this line is crossed, says David King of the group called Human Genetics Alert, there is no going back. And yeah, I'm going to raise that same flag. There isn't. You know, they keep pushing the envelope to see how much we'll tolerate or what has become normalized. And once that's happened, there is no going back. It's pushed forward. The transhumanism is getting closer every single day. Says the first step on a path that scientists have carefully mapped out toward the legalizations of GM babies. And interesting, there are three stories linked at the bottom. One is actually this story itself. One is the Chinese clone factory with the cattle, racehorses, sniffer dogs, children, whatever the hell else they're doing. And the last one is this one here. And we're going to scroll up because I knew I knew. CRISPR gene editing tools used to treat genetic disease in animals for the first time. This was January 4th. I've been promising we're going to do the story for a few days, so they've already done it, people, in a mammal. They have edited live genes in a mammal and tried to snip out a genetic defect with CRISPR and then let it replicate throughout the organism to find out what happens. Cue up scary music of movies like The Thing. For the first time ever, scientists have used CRISPR gene editing to successfully treat a genetic disease inside a fully developed mammal. CRISPR editing is a process where scientists can effectively rewrite the genetic code of an organism by cutting out and replacing individual components of DNA. In this study, researchers in the U.S. used CRISPR to treat an adult mouse model of Duchenne muscular dystrophy, delivering the gene editing system directly to the affected tissue by way of a non-pathogenic virus called adeno-associated virus, or AAV. And that's a lot. We watched a few videos on how CRISPR works, and that was one of the things that they did. They used this virus and sucked out its guts and put other stuff in there because the virus can go in and invade cells and then replicate. So it's a really good host to do this. Recent discussion about using CRISPR to correct genetic mutation in human embryos has rightfully generated considerable concern regarding the ethical implications of such an approach, says Charles Gersbach, a biomedical engineer at Duke University. But using CRISPR to correct genetic mutations in the affected tissues of sick patients, ding, 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 remember, always the sick, desperate, and dying. Those are the ones that are going to step up and be thankful that you were their savior. The affected tissues of sick patients is not under debate. All right, let's read that sentence again because that's important. But using CRISPR to correct genetic mutations in the affected tissues of sick patients is not under debate. These studies show a path where that is possible, but there's also a considerable amount of work to do. So is that like what they're proposing in the 21st Century Care Act, where, hey, these poor, sick, desperate people can have access now to these newfangled, unapproved, experimental, maybe make an arm grow out of your forehead technologies, because they have nothing else to lose. And then if it works, hey, we'll do a case study. And then we'll use that to peddle our wares to the rest of the American public. That's a pretty scary thought. Duchenne muscular dystrophy is a rare form of muscular dystrophy that affects about 1 in 5,000 human males. The disease caused by a genetic mutation impairs the body's ability to produce dystrophin, a protein chain that connects muscle fiber to surrounding tissue. And without the support of the protein, muscles in the body begin to deteriorate. Oh, this is horrible. Most men affected by DMD are wheelchair-bound by age 10, and many do not live beyond their 20s or their 30s. And while the researchers had previously used electrical jolts to deliver CRISPR and cultured cells, such an approach was not possible with a living patient. Fortunately, we have other means of getting in close. A major hurdle for the gene editing is delivery. And we know what genes need to be fixed for certain diseases, but getting the gene editing tools where they need to be is a huge challenge, says Chris Nelson, one of the researchers. The best way we have to do that right now is to take advantage of viruses, because they have spent billions of years evolving to figure out how to get their own viral genes into cells. And you know what's frightening about this technology? We've talked about this many times before, but a lot of people miss this. Is that this is the same technology that they're using to genetically modify plants, right? We've become just another organism to be able to genetically modify. They use viruses and they fill them with payloads like Trojan horses. And then they go in, they find the cracks in the cell, and then they go and invade, and then it replicates everywhere. You know, and there could be lots of therapeutic things that they do with this technology if it is done for good. But this is just such a massive, massive, pivotal point in the history of humankind. And they're just treating this like, let's do another experiment, see what happens. You know, I mean, this literally, and all, it's so complicated that 99% of the people on this planet probably don't have a freaking clue how this works. I don't even have half a clue. I got half a clue, but I can't find the other half of the clue. But, you know, the 99% of the people on the planet don't have even a half a clue as to how any of this works, nor do they care, really. They don't. It doesn't affect them. But if they're out there mixing and matching and doing whatever they want, I mean, we just found out for the last couple days we got animal and human hybrids, even though they're not grown to term, so they say, wink. We got animal and human hybrids growing all over the place. How long is it going to be before, like, an X-Files episode becomes real? You know, like I said yesterday, we've always learned, our parents have always told us, there's no such thing as monsters. Okay, that's debatable. Human monsters, yes. Kind of. There were. I mean, I can name a few. I can name quite a number of them. But monsters. Like monsters hiding in your closet or under your bed monsters. No. There really wasn't anything that was that monstrous, like otherworldly. But they'll be able to make that stuff. You know, humans and ants are two of the species on the planet that are warlike and like to kill each other and have battles over things. And we definitely, as a species, are lacking, as a species, I'm not saying as individuals, but as a species, are lacking in morals and ethics. You know, we, just because we're not out killing children in Syria, let's say, we're sitting here, and I mean, we fought 3 years so they didn't go into Syria, and they're there now. There really isn't much that we could do, but everybody's silent. Where are all the protests? Why aren't people protesting them bombing hospitals again? I just saw they hit another hospital. It was in Yemen, I think, but still. I saw a story yesterday. The number is so beyond for 2015. The number of bombs that we dropped on the Middle East, on 5 countries, I believe. It was just staggering. Hold on. I'm going to find it. Council on Foreign Relations says that the U.S. dropped 23,144 bombs on 6 Muslim countries in 2015. I mean, I'm sure those Muslim countries included, like, Afghanistan, Syria, Iraq, places where we've stirred up all the shit, and now all those poor people who are living there have their lives completely destroyed, and every belonging, the few belongings that they owned, lost to become refugees. I'm just saying that with this gene editing technology comes a huge responsibility for proper caretaking and long, deep thought about how it is going to affect the future. You're going to need caretakers. That's what we don't have on this planet. Our caretakers, people that aren't influenced by money, aren't influenced by fame, have a big heart and want to make certain that we hold true to Mother Earth, what we are, to nature. I just think that there are too many people thinking that we need to make us human 2.0. Oh, look at how defective we are because there's genetic diseases. We need to fix ourselves. We need to become better. And oh, we need little nanobot repairing tools in our bloodstream to cure cancer. I just saw actually Bill Gates just invested in some new biodiagnostics company that'll be able to diagnose all cancers. Maybe we'll look at that after this. Anyway, all right, let's finish this story before I start getting off on tangents. You know how much I hate that. All right, anyway, major hurdle is for gene delivery, editing, gene editing delivery. And we know what genes need to be fixed for certain diseases, but getting the gene editing tools where they need to go is a huge challenge. And the best way we have to do it right now is to take advantage of viruses. But they have spent billions of years evolving to figure out how to get their own viral genes into cells. So to repurpose viruses as delivery vehicles for gene therapy, researchers take out any harmful or replicating genes in a virus and insert therapeutic genes they want to apply to the patient's tissue. In this study, the researchers performed the technique on a mouse model with a debilitating mutation of one of the protein coding regions called exons of the dystrophin gene, which renders the gene unable to produce the protein. The team programmed the CRISPR system to cut out this dysfunctional exon, which prompts the body's natural repair system to snitch on the remaining gene, to stitch the remaining gene back together, creating a shortened but now functional version of the gene. The researchers first experimented with the technique by delivering the therapy directly to a leg muscle in an adult mouse, but once they saw that the leg muscle had been restored in strength, thanks to its new supply of functional dystrophin, they injected the CRISPR AAV combination into the animal's bloodstream. This resulted in partial dystrophin corrections in other muscles all throughout the body, including the heart, which is significant as heart failure is a common cause of death for patients with DMD. While it's early in its early days, there's a long road ahead in getting this kind of approach to work on fixing genetic diseases in living people. And yes, do not be the first, second, third, or even the 100th in line. You know, if they ever get to a point where this can be used, it's going to be very expensive, and it probably isn't going to be for you and me unless you get lots of money. The researchers involved believe their findings, which are reported in Science, will indeed help to get us to that point. You know, the thing is, right now they're doing these newfangled treatments on common people because they happen to be the lab rats that are available, right? Nobody wants to be a 1.0 unless you're desperate, sick, and dying. And that's why, I mean, when you don't have a chance and, you know, it's either that or kick the bucket, I guess that is the time. You know, my thoughts may be very different if I was on my deathbed and they said, hey, we got this new experiment that we've been working on, and it might work, but it might not. But hey, you know what? You can contribute to science by being a human who will go down in the history books as us trying to perfect this technology. But I just know from any type of 1.0, I definitely wouldn't want that to be me. I guess it's better than doing nothing, but anyway, let's finish this story up because I want to get on to other stuff now. This is still a significant amount of work to do to translate this to a human therapy and demonstrate its safety, says Gerspach. But these results coming from our first experiments are very exciting. And from here, we'll be optimizing the delivery system, evaluating the approach in more severe models of DMD, and assessing the efficiency and safety in larger animals with the eventual goal of getting it into clinical human trials. So there you go. All right. So back over the last few days, we talked about some genetic modification of cows, of pigs. They actually mentioned sheep in that one story yesterday. They're doing cloning. They're doing genetic modification. They're making human-animal hybrids and chimeras. You know, they're not making Fido talk, but they are cutting in human genes to see how it'll influence the growth of certain organs, like in the case of what the story from the MIT Technology Review was talking about yesterday. They were using pigs. It almost seems to me like they were growing the human organ by creating a genetically modified pig that was missing the correct genes for a heart, let's say, or missing the correct genes for a liver. And then they were splicing in the human gene in that spot in the DNA where the heart or the liver gene went. And the pig was then, once it was developing, grew a heart or a liver that was for the person whose DNA that they spliced in with the pig. I'm pretty sure that's what they were talking about doing. And as a matter of fact, then that Japanese scientist who was responsible for this research said that it was too much paperwork to get scientific samples of DNA. So he was using some of his own DNA. All right. Here's a story, though, along those same-ish kind of-ish lines that I wanted to share with you, because this came home as a homework assignment for fourth graders in November. And I made a photocopy of this because I was just really surprised. It was the third topic, and I don't remember what the second one was, but the first one was getting the kids' ideas on self-driving cars from Google, and they gave them all a questionnaire. And I don't remember what the second topic was, but I'm telling you what, then there was this third topic. They were all within the same month. They were all debate topics, but they were all the topics that we've been talking about here on the show. And I thought to myself, wow, that's definitely some heavy stuff for a 9 or a 10-year-old to start digesting and giving opinions on. Just struck me as odd. All right, so check this out. So my kid hands me this paper, debate prompt 45. Should doctors transplant pigs' organs into human bodies? She's like, all right, Mom, I got to pick an either pro or con, or am I for or against this? So what do you think? And I'm like, what? What are you reading? So I start reading this. Some people think that doctors should use pig organs to save human lives, and others think this is a bad idea. What do you think? Now, remember, this is November, so before we got any type of announcement officially that they were growing organs inside pigs, we did know, though, that they have been using pigs' organs as transplant organs. And they do have issues with, like, rejection and that. So that's kind of where this mixing human DNA into the pig DNA, why they think that this is such a huge step forward, is because it's going to prevent any of the rejection that they've seen using animal body parts. Anyway, doctors can now save lives by temporarily transplanting pig organs into human bodies. Pig organs are similar in size and weight to human organs, and that is why they function so well in humans. Companies, now wait till you hear the things they touch on in here. Companies are now even cloning pigs for this purpose. So wait, we're talking about like using pig organs in humans. Cloning. I mean, this is in the first paragraph. Cloning. Pig clones were developed for organs that are compatible with human bodies. And within the next year, there may even be a permanent pig-to-human organ transplant. Ding, ding, ding. Some people say that we shouldn't pursue these transplants. They fear that pigs' organs could introduce new diseases to humans. That's something I was mentioning yesterday. I mean, you don't know. And we are seeing some pretty strange transmissible things through the blood. Remember, we discovered back a few months ago that they're even thinking that Alzheimer's might be contagious through like blood transfusions and dental works. But, you know, they make it sound so simple. But here's the scary part of that. They are thinking that the reason why Alzheimer's is quote unquote transmissible is that it's not like a disease per se. It's the same type of disease as the chronic wasting, mad cow, brain wasting diseases with malformed proteins. So if it actually is some sort of disease that we've already acquired from an animal, like beef, eating mad cow laden beef, that then got into our blood, that then got into our brain, that then when we transmit our blood, whether it be a blood transfusion or we're doing dental work, that it may be transmissible. So that's what worries me about this whole animal transplant. I'm sure that they have ways, but you know, like the bovine leukemia virus they've been finding in milk for 30 years and never told anybody. And now they're finding bovine leukemia viruses in breast cancers, but they didn't think it would affect humans. You know, it's just frightening, this cross-mixing of species. You know, and then let's take it a step further. Some of this new stuff, growing human organs inside of animals. Many people also think that killing animals for their organs is a violation of the animal's rights. And we actually talked about that yesterday. What gives you the right to live over another living organism? What gives you the right to have them create and design and raise a pig just to be slaughtered for your benefit? And I mean, I guess that does happen every day with the food supply. And we really don't have a choice over what animal is raised or killed, but it definitely is an ethical conundrum. People in favor of transplants say that the risk for diseases are minimal. There are also claims that animal rights are not just important when a human animal is dying. So what do you think? Should doctors put pigs' organs into human bodies? Now, guys, that's a fourth grade debate assignment. And all right, so check this out. So then there's a yes or a no box. Yes, this is a no-brainer. There are 180,000 people worldwide waiting for organ transplants. Many of these people will die waiting for an organ. If pig organs were used, many more lives would be saved. And we cannot let skeptics and animal rights advocates hold us back. Scientists should keep working hard to develop better transplanting procedures. It is a matter of life and death. And, you know, I don't disagree with that. But like I said yesterday, I think we should start focusing our attention on using that 3D scaffolding and our skin stem cells that can then be coaxed into any other stem cell and allow the organs to grow on a scaffold that could then be transplanted into the body. The con or no on this says humans might get deadly viruses from pig organ transplants. Some scientists think that diseases like mad cow disease, so they even mention mad cow in this document, could come into the human population through contact with these animals. Who knows what kind of new diseases pigs could give us? But anyway, animals are not simply tools to be used and abused as humans see fit. They have rights too, and putting animals' organs in humans' bodies should not be allowed. So at the bottom, it says your turn. Let's talk about it. If someone you know or love needed a transplant, ding, 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 how would you feel about the use of pig organs? I mean, I don't know. I don't think we learned anything new from that story. But what I wanted to point out to you is that this is the stuff they're sending home with 9 or 10 year olds to ponder. Now, I don't know about you, but at 9 or 10 years old, I was not thinking about genetic modification or the ethics of transplanting organs from an animal into a human. And then putting the guilt trip on me at the bottom, saying, hey, if it was somebody you loved or knew, would you go along with this technology? All right, a little bit more. Let's see. This is still that machine yesterday that I was using, and it looks like, yeah, here we go. There was a new story that came out on January 9th. Using DNA to cure brain cancer. Well, I have known somebody who came down with brain cancer. And didn't any type of cancer like that, you don't last very long. UNC Lindberger Comprehensive Cancer Center scientists have examined the way an enzyme fixes DNA as the basis for developing techniques for fighting brain cancer. Cells, when dividing, utilize an enzyme called DICER, and this helps cells repair any DNA damage that occurs when errors are made as cells copy genetic material again and again, as is required in the production of new cells. Scientists have used their knowledge of DICER's role in repairing DNA as a new technique to kill rapidly dividing cancerous cells in the brain. Through studies, the research group found that when they extracted DICER from preclinical models of medulloblastoma, which is a common type of brain cancer in children, they noted high levels of DNA damage in the cancer cells. The damage led to the death of the cancer cells, and subsequently the tumors became smaller, and the remaining cancer cells appear to be more sensitive to chemotherapy. In a research note, Professor Mohanish Desmukha, who led the study, noted this is the first time that the specific function for DICER for DNA damage has been looked at in the context of developing brain or even in brain tumors, despite the fact that the protein has been extensively studied. It is hoped that this research will prevent cancer development or make brain tumors more sensitive to chemotherapy, blah, blah, blah. The research is published in the journal Cell Reports. So, I don't know. Keep an eye out for that. You know, it's all about cancer. That's what it's all going to be. And if you notice, here we go. This one came out yesterday. Oh, yeah, it wasn't just Bill Gates. It was Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos. It's great. A single blood test for all cancers. Well, yes. Illumina, great name for a venture capitalist biotechnology funded corporation. Oh, I wonder if this is the one that he bought. Illumina, Bill Gates, and Jeff Bezos launch a startup to make the single blood test for all cancers happen. How wonderful is that? What if a simple blood test could detect any cancer early when it was still easy to treat? And that's true. I don't think I complain about that one. But how many cancers would we find out we all had? Sounds like science fiction. But Illumina, the $24 billion biotechnology company that has pioneered cheap, efficient sequencing of DNA. Oh, yeah, we read about them. I think actually Illumina is the back end to 23andMe. Didn't we find that out? I'm pretty sure we did. Says that it could be a reality in a few years. It is now launching its new startup called Grail. And they're calling such a test that because it will be a holy grail for cancer doctors. Yeah, think of all the money. Think how many people are going to line up for your genetic treatments. With $100 million in funding, Illumina will continue to hold the majority of the share, and other backers include Sutter Hill Ventures, Arch Ventures, Jeff Bezos' Bezos Expedition, and Bill Gates. The startup could have vast medical, economic, and societal implications if this technology really works. Everything here is directed at being a pan-cancer test, something that is a universal test, says Jay Flatley, who has been Illumina's chief executive for 16 years and has improved the power of DNA sequencing at a rate that exceeds improvements in microchips over the same period. So pretty exponential is what he's saying. This is our largest investment ever, says Robert Nielsen, a partner at Arch. Nielsen helped found Illumina, and more recently, some of the most well-funded startups ever, including cancer company Juno Therapeutics, which raised $310 million before its IPO, and Denali, D-E-N-A-L-I Therapeutics, which focuses on brain diseases, and they raised $217 million before their IPO. It remains to be proven, says Nielsen, but it is likely to be the case that you will be able to know deep and large amounts of information about multiple cancers with just one single test. Flatley says that the idea for Grail was hatched 18 months ago when Illumina researchers were trying the company's DNA sequencers out on blood. They found that as the company's sequencers became more powerful, they were able to detect trace amounts of cancer DNA in those samples. Put on a seatbelt. That one was out of Forbes. And I think they actually, wait. Continue. I thought that was a little bit of a short story. Let's continue. Yeah, this company, Illumina, I am pretty 99.99% certain we had read that they are actually the company that is behind the sequencing that 23andMe does. There is a phenomenon that we now know that tumors put out at very early stages and their DNA goes into circulation. We can now measure that with incredible precision. And I think it's one of the biggest breakthroughs that we can see in cancer in the next few years is this possibility where there could be a blood test or a urine test that detects early stages. Cancers start out having the same genetic code as the people they afflict, but what makes them into cancers is a slow buildup of mutations in their DNA, and these changes mean that cells no longer listen to the body's commands to die or stop growing. They develop cloaking devices to avoid the immune system and commandeer their host's energy stores. But tiny bits of this changed DNA are present in the blood, perhaps from an early stage. And Flatley says that his researchers think that they can find this DNA by identifying dozens or hundreds of different genetic mutations with an amazingly high degree of certainty to tell if someone has cancer without causing scares for healthy people. The proof needed for such a test will be vast and expensive to create, and Flatley imagines a study that would include tens of thousands of patients. Well, how great then that they're working with the National Institute of Health and 23andMe to have their hands on all of those DNA samples, which we discovered yesterday in the story that we were reading. And I don't think we ever realized finished that story. It was titled Taking Online DNA Test and You Could Be Revealing More Than You Realize. That's what it was. If we got a second, we'll get back and finish that one. But yeah, all that data is available. I believe there were over 1 million samples already that they were doing some sort of National Institute of Health sequencing with, trying to find cures to genetic diseases. Anyway, back to the story. It says, each year the study might find small numbers of patients who had cancer, and at first many of them would be in the late stages of the disease. But as time passed, the study should start only identifying patients with early stages of cancer because the tumors were always being caught when they are new. The proof needed for such a test will be vast, and they imagine that it will include tens of thousands of patients with their genes sequenced hundreds of thousands of times. And instead of sequencing entire genomes 30 times, as is done looking for genetic changes, samples from these patients might be sequenced hundreds or thousands of times to look for changes that might indicate cancer. Critics are likely to see problems. Will the test detect small cancers that can be kept in check by people's immune systems, meaning that people would receive treatment who didn't need it? Would it simply be wrong sometimes? And can Grail, even with such a deep war chest, really prove that such a test works? Flatley conceded that the company may need to take some smaller steps. One possibility would be to combine the Grail test with mammography. Hey, mammograms have a high false positive rate. Of a blood test could help point out women who don't need painful biopsies or detect cancers the mammograms miss. That would be a big deal on its own. And yeah, the whole mammogram thing, you know, I just saw after they pushed it for so long and they were recommending, like, if you had certain traits in your family, that you go get a mammogram starting in your mid-30s and do it every year then. And now I saw they changed that full recommendation not to start until 50. So that's 15 years of mammograms that people I know got because it was recommended. And there's 15 years of radiation now that they also receive because of that that isn't going to be deemed necessary in the future. And for now, this test doesn't even exist. Flatley is confident, though, that it will within a year, and Grail has already talked to the FDA. It needs a CEO. Well, I'm not lining up for that. Klausner, the former chief, is leaving Illumina but remains with Grail as the director. And for now, the new company will probably be consolidated into Illumina's financials. Anything that Bill Gates is connected to, keep an eye on. That's all I got to say. All right. In the last few minutes, let's get back to this Take an Online DNA Test and You Could Be Revealing More Than You Realize. This was a story that was posted in one of those transhumanist groups that I subscribe to and keep a little profile on. Sometimes I want to just go like adding comments, but then I restrain myself. Anyway. Getting your DNA sequence is now so cheap and easy that you don't need to see a medical professional. This is how it started out. A variety of online companies are offering this direct-to-consumer genetic testing for health and recreational purposes. But when you purchase one of these tests, there is a good chance that you don't know everything that you've just agreed to. With many new online companies, genetic testing firms rely on contracts to govern the relationships with their customers. Contracts online are everywhere, appearing as terms and conditions. And with the click of a button or just the browsing of a website, you have agreed to these conditions without necessarily knowing what you've agreed to. It is the same when you purchase a DNA test online. There are contracts and privacy policies that often resemble those of the largest internet firms with standard terms and conditions, but some of these contracts may even qualify as containing unfair terms. And remember, we talked about 23andMe. They have a box that you check that says, yeah, you know, use my DNA that you've collected to determine whether or not I'm related to Neanderthals or whatever for human testing to help cure disease, to help make you 23andMe a lot richer because you just spun off pharmaceutical company that's going to be working on pharmaceuticals based upon genetic disorders. The guy that was writing this article has read and reviewed 71 contracts that provide health tests in the course of his doctoral research, and he believes the customers need to be more aware of what they are getting into. Aside from the dubious reliability of some of the claims made by some of these companies, online genetic testing raises serious privacy and information security concerns. Because when DNA is sequenced and stored, it serves as a unique way to identify you and potentially your known and unknown relatives. DNA could reveal things that could significantly affect your lifestyle and that you may not want others to know. It includes your risk for Alzheimer's, cancer, diabetes, and other traits, as how likely you are to become addicted to different substances. In fact, as genomic science rapidly progresses, we don't yet know the limits of what DNA might reveal. We are also increasingly using biometric data and security systems, and your sequenced DNA might one day be used in this context. If your genetic code was linked to your bank account, you might not want this stored insecurely or shared widely without safeguards. You can change a bank account password, but you can't change your genetic sequencing. At the same time, the industry does not have a good track record in storing and using sensitive information. Right, people have been giving this up and they don't have even a quarter of a clue as to what it is or what it means in the future. And there are also questions of what happens if the company is sold or dissolved, or if its servers are hacked and the data is stolen. And worse still, reading the contract in full may not actually protect you. It is common to include clauses that alter the company's terms at any time without notifying you. And hey, maybe they can even use your DNA to splice into a pig. All right, guys, it's Friday. Make sure you have an awesome weekend. All kinds of good radio tonight, tomorrow, Sunday. Everybody have an awesome weekend, and I will catch up with you on Monday. Everyone take care.